It'll be second and one. Forget the one. They've got to get it into the end zone. Carolina trying to stop him and win the game. Here's Manuel with a fade and wide open. Touchdown to Stevie Johnson.
For it's, you know, for you too, it always came easy to us. You know what I mean? Like, we're just gifted. We were blessed with talent and favor also. People liked us and they gave us opportunities. And so when that opportunity was taken from me, I learned that, like, okay, that loss of confidence or that show of loss of confidence to my team was more important than actually throwing that interception. No matter how bad things are, if you're the leader, you can never, never look defeated, especially to your men that are looking at you for leadership.
Manuel sets up, throws, deep ball, Woods, touchdown, Buffalo!
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood. Our next guest is EJ Manuel. EJ, out of high school, was the number two rated quarterback in the entire country. He went to Florida State. He was the second quarterback all time to win four games as a quarterback in college, Pat White being the other one. He was the 16th pick to the Bills in the 2013 NFL Draft. We played a couple seasons together up in Buffalo with him under center, and I loved playing with EJ. He's a great competitor. He's a friend of mine. He was a phenomenal leader, and now he's an analyst with the ACC Network where we work together, and he's fully taken his work ethic from the field to excel already in the sports media world. Through this podcast, we'll talk about what made him great, some struggles he had in Buffalo. EJ shows great vulnerability through this podcast. You'll be so impressed with the man he is, the man of faith he is. He talks a lot about his dad and his family, and I know that you'll enjoy this conversation with EJ Manuel. What's up, EJ? Welcome to the show.
Big E, what's up, baby?
I appreciate your time. We're up here in Buffalo in the middle of a blizzard. We got my roast here tonight, and I just really appreciate you taking the time out to come out here for the roast all the way from LA,
of course,
and for doing the podcast. And start off by telling the listeners where you grew up, sports you grew up playing, maybe through high school.
Yeah, so from Virginia Beach, Virginia, grew up, you know, middle class family, blue collar. My dad worked at the naval base pretty much all my life. He's still working there as a civilian. My mom, she's been a travel agent for years. Currently now she is a realtor, so she's doing well with that. My sister, Amber, she's 33. She works for Avis Budget Group's claims office at their corporate office in Virginia Beach. And then we have my little niece. Her name is Autumn. She's three, a little younger than your daughter. So
yeah,
kind of enjoying that process of being not a dad, obviously, but just being Uncle EJ. And
but you get the perk of being around little kids without having to change all the diapers
exactly,
and all the responsibility.
Yeah, I get the fun part. So I get her when she's, you know, excited, ready to play, not when she doesn't want to go to bed and she doesn't want to wake up for school, all that kind of stuff. My sister handles that. But then I got my two grandmas. So, yeah, from there, we call it the 757. I'm sure you've heard me say that before, and we're extremely proud of that. Ty Rodd's from there. Cam Chancellor's from there. Allen Iverson, Michael Vick, Aaron Brooks, Alonzo Mourning, Bruce Smith, who's pretty much my uncle. My dad and Bruce grew up together from third grade on. They lived on the same street. So Bruce and I still talk a lot.
Who's an incredible dude and a fascinating guy who I want to have on the podcast day. I called a game at Virginia Tech this year. We're staying in a hotel, and I texted Bruce. I said, man, there's like a shrine to you in this hotel. Yeah. It's got your jersey up and all this. He goes,
Smith Landing, probably.
Yeah, he goes, well, I own that.
I own it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, man, he's doing well, obviously, as a developer. He's actually working on a project back home, so that's exciting to be a part of, possibly. So, just a lot of people, and as far as athletes, and a lot of good people too. You know, just a small community. It's like seven cities: Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Chesapeake, Portsmouth, Newport News, Hampton, and Suffolk. And it's kind of, you know, we call it Hampton Roads. Mm-hmm. And so, as far as, you know, the athletes, we all grow up playing against each other. Like, I've been playing against Tyrod in football and basketball since fourth grade, maybe fifth grade.
Wow.
AAU basketball. Percy Harvin, played against him in the city championship. There's a picture in the newspaper of me, like, on Percy's back. He's dragging one of my players up under him, but Percy was, like, 12. I think we might have been 10, and he won the city championship that year. Then we won it the following. So, you know, it's, we're all proud to be from there, especially once we get into, like, the NFL or in college. And, you know, we obviously root for each other, but the competition level at a young age back home is, like, crazy. And so it's kind of like, as you said earlier, like, if you're not an alpha in your hometown, you usually don't make it, or you have bad grades, or you're right. selling drugs or something like that. You know, it's kind of kind of the same everywhere in the country, but it's definitely one of those places where, you know, I walk around, I'm, like, proud to be from the 757.
Definitely. And so what sports you grow up playing? I know you played football, basketball. Was that it? You play other sports?
Nah, bro. You know, I played everything. Baseball, soccer, track, football, basketball. Messed around with tennis a little bit in high school just to do it. Why not?
Right.
And, yeah, so, I mean, five-sport athlete. And then as I got older in high school, and you know this, E, like, you want to go home. At least I wanted to go home after school sometimes. So you have football season and go right into basketball season and go right into track season, mm-hmm. you know, and then you're right back into football. So I wouldn't say my junior year, my senior year, I told my dad I didn't want to play basketball. And he was like, you sure? Da, da, da. But, yeah, I mean, I, by that time, my junior year, I think I had 30-some scholarship offers, you know.
Wow.
And then by my senior year, I had 51. So, you know, it was kind of not necessarily saying, like, all right, I just knew I was going to be playing football once I went to college. I might have had a few interested people, like, schools for basketball, nothing, like, major. I think the biggest one might have been VCU in Richmond, which was about an hour and a half from my hometown. Coach Capel was there, who's now at – where's Capel at? At Pitt.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he's at Pitt. And so, yeah, man, played all the sports, and I still do. You know what I mean? Now that I've retired, and I'm sure we'll get to that part of the pod, but, you know, I still hoop 3 times a week back in L.A. I still play tennis every now and then. To be real, actually, and tennis is fun, bro. I don't know if you've ever played it, but it well, also golf. That's another sport I forgot to mention.
Yep,
get my golf game right. Brooks Koepka, you know, shouted me out the other day.
I messaged you on Instagram.
You did.
Brooks Koepka commented that your swing looked good.
Yeah,
I'm like,
bro.
Man, there's not a better compliment right now. That dude's hotter than anybody on tour.
He is,
and he's shouting you out on Instagram on your golf swing.
Yeah.
I'm like, dang, you came a lot.
Yes.
You came a long way.
Came a long way, bro, and in a lot of facets. But Brooks and I actually went to college together, so we were the class of 08 coming in from high school, and we did, like, our orientation together. And it's funny, bro, like, back then Brooks was kind of like a smaller guy. He wasn't as diesel as he is now. Kind of like you guys are probably the same size now, I would say. Like, he's big. He's rocked up. And so in college, you know, as football players, you know the basketball players, you know the golf players, you know the softball players, you know, bro.
Right.
Like, you kind of hang out with them, but it's just like, hey, what's up, bro? Like, good to see you. You don't spend that much time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to say maybe my third or fourth year in the league, I saw his face, and I was like, bro, he looks so familiar. And sure enough, I was like, wait, that's Brooks. Like, oh, shit, you know, whatever. And so, obviously, one of the best golfers in the world right now. And, you know, that repost made my day. I kind of acted like it wasn't a big deal, but I ain't going to lie. As a guy that's trying to get good at golf, when he did that, I was like, yo, that's a big deal. And then I got a huge bump in my Instagram. Like, everybody's, like, starting to look at it stuff. So it was cool.
That is super cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
cool.
I was blown away by it. And, you know, throughout high school, you end up as the number two recruit in the country for the quarterback position.
Yep.
So you can essentially go anywhere you want in the country. Anywhere you say you're interested in, you're going to get a scholarship. You can go anywhere you wanted. What separated Florida State from the pack to leave the 757,
sure.
leave your hometown and head down there?
Yeah, it was a blessing, bro. I guess the biggest thing was Jimbo at FSU. Knowing that Jimbo was at LSU. A few years before he went to Florida State, Coach Jamarcus, he coached Matt Flynn, who was our teammate for a little bit in Buffalo early on in my career. And then Matt Mock and Rohan Davey, all those guys who I thought were great quarterbacks that transitioned to the NFL. And, you know, I just fell in love with the university. To be real, my head coach in my high school was like, whichever school prays for you is the school you should go to. All right. And he said this maybe my sophomore year because I started getting attention then. Went to a couple camps, got MVPs, Elite 11, all that kind of stuff. So I started – my name got out there. And I remember we went to FSU for, like, an unofficial visit, and we're leaving. My mom, dad, and sister, and we're driving back to drop Amber off at High Point University, which is where she played basketball. And so their team chaplain, who's very close to my family, Clint Purvis, he's like, hey, Manuel family, wait. I want to pray with you guys before you leave. And literally, bro, like, we're getting in the car, like, about to drive back to North Carolina, then Virginia. And right then, bro, I knew. You know what I mean? I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he prayed with us, and my dad and I both looked at each other like, that's it. You know? And so I want to say maybe the next day I called Jimbo, and I officially committed to FSU my senior year. So this was like summertime going into my senior year. And, yeah, I guess that was kind of the confirmation. And obviously, you know, Myron Rowe, he was my host, you know, so just seeing him, the kind of man he was on and off the field, I saw myself in that same light, not just being a football player, but also a great academic student. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and then obviously the rich tradition. I mean, it's FSU. So
right.
I'd be sitting at home on my computer playing the War Channel on YouTube, and then Vince Williams, Nigel Bradham, who was also our teammate in Buffalo. All those guys would hit me up like, hey, man, come on in. Like, we want you. And these are all Florida kids. I'm from Virginia. So, you know, when I started feeling love from the Florida kids who are considered some of the best athletes out there in high school, you know, I was like, man, maybe I should. And so my second one's going to be LSU. So it would have been wild to play with Odell and Jarvis and all those guys. At the same time, I felt like the coaching at the quarterback position was going to be so much better at Florida State just because of Jimbo. And just to go back to that, I felt like he really prepared all of us. Cause, I mean, he had Christian, he had me, and Jameis all went in the first round. So people could say what they want, but that's still a big deal. And so
– huge deal.
Huge.
Think about that. Like, when's the – Tua is going to go in the first round this year in the NFL draft. When's the last time Alabama, who gets to choose any quarterback that they want every single year?
Yeah.
They haven't had a first-round quarterback since when?
I can't think of one, to
be
honest.
The 90s?
Yeah, I can't think of one.
I mean
– can't think of one. So.
Yeah, so that shows that there's so much that goes into the developmental process of a quarterback through high school.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think a lot of it has to do with – you know, the offenses that we ran. It was a pro-style offense. Get under center, take a snap, do a play-action drop or a play-action pass, you know, whatever. And we did all that stuff. And that's what they do in NFL. Now it's starting to kind of transition more into, like, the zone read, which I don't know how you feel as a lineman. Do you care about that kind of stuff? Like, how did you feel toward the end of your career? Not to switch the platform, but I'm just curious, like, how did that make you feel as far as once we started doing more zone read instead of just straight, you know, man blocking or zone blocking? Like, how did it make you feel?
So I like the zone read concepts. I think it's great. You if your quarterback can do it, it's a weapon. You pull guys out of the box, and the RPO stuff, the zone read, all that stuff I think is great. I think it's great for young quarterbacks because you're doing more of what they did in college.
Right.
So you're adapting to what they do, especially early in their career, and then transition them into more of your traditional West Coast three-step timing pre-snap reads.
Yep.
Well, let them do what they're good at early on. From a lineman's perspective, there's times where I'm getting basically a free play. If we're running an RPO and you throw out of it because it's a bad look, if that was just a called run, that's a dead play, and my guy can make the play in the backfield, and I'm going to look silly on film.
Right. Yeah.
You throw it out,
if
it's a bad look and it's an RPO, a run-pass option for those that are listening that don't know that, we have a called run play. You could throw out of it and just hit an open receiver.
Yeah,
well, that's a free
5 yards.
That's a free play for me.
No doubt.
And so I like that kind of stuff. I like the innovation. I've always been an X's and O's guys. I love the chess match of football, you know, but I think with – the spread option, the spread offenses, the options, and everything else that's coming with it, I think you're going to see, and you saw it a little bit this year, the Ravens, the Titans, the teams that bulk up on offense, they can really go downhill on you because you have to get smaller on defense to defend that.
Sure.
Well, now these other teams are taking advantage of that.
And you have
Derrick Henry, who's 255, and he's coming downhill. And now your linebackers that you have to defend the RPOs when you play 1 week, and then the next week you got to defend that.
Yep.
You got to defend the power run game. It's tough on defenses.
Yeah.
So I think that there is still a place in football for the power run game for a traditional offense.
Yeah.
But I think for like a Cliff Kingsbury this year, Kyler Murray has a really productive year. Now he's playing on the West Coast. Not a lot of people saw him. They didn't win a ton of games, but he had a really productive year.
Yeah.
Well, Cliff Kingsbury did a lot of what he did in college for him. And then over the years, you don't want to take those continual hits at the quarterback position, so you just transition them more into a pocket passer.
Right.
And is that your feeling as well?
I would agree. I think you hit the nail on the head, man. When you as a rookie, when you have a rookie quarterback, and I can attest to this from my career, you have to do things that he did well in college. That's why you picked him first, second, third round. That's why you picked guys early to be, whether they're going to be a starter, the rookie, you know, the first day as a player, or, you know, whether they're a starter in 2 years or 3 years. You do what they do well, because why try to morph a guy into a system that he didn't play in college? Like, if you don't know that he can have success in it, why put him in that? And I dealt with that. I mean, I love Nathaniel Hackett, but I remember, you know, Nate was teaching me some things that, you know, I had never done. So I remember, like, the punch step and all that kind of stuff. And it sounds minute, but I remember rookie minicamp, you know, instead of just taking a snap and just dropping back, he had me like step. It was just kind of weird. And so it threw off my timing as far as my drop and things like that. So I just say little small things like that, you know, for a rookie quarterback, kind of convoluted because you're already thinking a million miles per hour anyways. You know, you're dealing with all pros. You're dealing with, you know, guys that you kind of looked up to as a college player. Now they're in the huddle looking at you. Like, I remember you getting in there, Freddie, CJ, Stevie Johnson. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of, I ain't going to say pressure, but it's just you're nervous. You know what I mean? Because you want to do the right things. You want to say the right things. You want your teammates to respect you. But then when you're also thinking about the technicality of getting from your drop to the five-step drop just to throw a ball, it was tough, you know, so that's why when I saw how Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid were, and I was with them a few months ago during the offseason, and we'll get to that, but I saw the rapport that they had with each other. I mean, it was open mode of communication, bro. And this is obviously a year after Pat had won the MVP anyway, so, of course, you know, he and Andy are super tight. But you could just tell. You know, I think one thing Pat benefited from was having Alex there, Alex Smith, his first, 15 games of the season, his rookie year. And then I think Pat played his 16th or the last game of the season and balled out and then obviously became the starter his second year. But he had a chance to learn. He had a chance to sit. He had a chance to watch how Alex, you know, came to meetings, how he talked to his teammates, how he addressed the coaches, how he said, like, hey, I like this play. I don't like this play. And all those things. And I feel like that – and I'm sure Pat would tell you that. Pat would be like, man, I was blessed because I had an all-pro, maybe a Hall of Famer. Right, I don't know. What would you say, Alex Smith? Maybe close.
Not
to
at this point. Not at this point. If he wouldn't have broke his leg, if he would have had
knows?
Some success, if he wins a Super Bowl somewhere, potentially.
But I mean, he's a great player, great quarterback in this league for a very long time. So you know, I feel
and
like,
a phenomenal human being.
Yeah, great guy.
Be
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I mean, I feel like when young quarterbacks get that opportunity to learn from an older dude, especially when, like you said, it's a good guy too, not just like okay. You know, like when Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, what we all heard, like, you know, Brett wasn't really rocking with Aaron or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when you have a guy that kind of takes him under his wing and doesn't mind, you know, showing him the ropes a little bit, I think that goes a long way.
And we mentioned the alphas in hometowns and alphas in the business. When you have two alphas in that quarterback room and you have Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers hasn't got along with many quarterbacks.
Right, right.
Especially someone that comes in and tries to compete with them. Yeah. I remember my buddy Brian Brohm going up to Green Bay, and they liked each other.
Sure.
They hung out, Kentucky Derby and all that. But those two guys both wanted to be the starter.
Right.
A great backup quarterback in the NFL is a guy who takes his role as the backup, and he wants to do everything he can to help that starter.
Yeah.
And we'll just transition to this. I had it for a little bit later, but, you know, you come into Buffalo as a first-round draft pick, and in your rookie training camp, Kevin Cobb, who was supposed to be that guy for you, gets injured, and you lose him. That was supposed to be your mentor, and now, you know, I almost take that role as your center, I poured into you.
Yeah, you did.
And I would do anything in the world for you.
Protections.
You knew that. Yeah.
Yeah, reminding me on stuff. Yes, bro, you did.
But there's only
Huddle
so much
calls.
I can do from the center position.
Yeah.
How much do you think that hurt your career trajectory, just not having someone like that in Buffalo early on?
Bro, so I was telling somebody this story maybe a month ago. So I looked back at our quarterback room once Cobb left, because Cobb had, I think he hurt his knee. Didn't he slip on like a tarp or something like that? Walking to walkthrough or something. So he hurt
his
knee.
Which is just classic Bills that, like, we had a turf mat we were running from practice field to practice field that we could slip on.
Sure, right.
But your
exactly.
starting quarterback could.
Exactly, which happened to him. And I thought, you know, I was playing well in training camp, you know, for a rookie. You know what I mean? I was making some plays. I remember throwing a touchdown to Marquise Goodwin on like a 2-minute drill, which gave me a bunch of confidence. I had got a chance to go with the ones maybe, or maybe the twos, whatever. And so I was like, all right, cool. You know, and then I'm still thinking that Cobb's going to be, because that's what they told me when I first got here. Okay. You know, I remember Doug Whaley, Coach Marone, they're like, hey, you know, we want you to learn from Cobb, which I'm like, all right, cool. You know what I mean? I'm still going to obviously apply pressure because I'm a competitor, but I was actually excited to get that chance to learn. And just see, you know, because Kevin had made money in the league. He played. He's had success. So I was like, great. And so once he got hurt, then I remember, okay, now it's me and Jeff Toole, who I love. But we're both rookies. You know what I mean? Like,
and he's an undrafted rookie.
Undrafted
free agent,
rookie, right.
And, yeah, I love Jeff
Toole
as much as anybody.
Love him. But I mean, we just have no experience, right? And then we got Nathaniel Hackett, who had no experience in the NFL as far as being an offensive coordinator, quarterback coach. We didn't have one. So I guess Nate kind of encompassed that as well as the OC. And then you had Coach Marone, who was also a first-year NFL head coach. So I look back at it, and I'm not blaming anybody. I would never – like, my dad raised me to not make excuses, right? But as far as when I looked at other – like my other friends who are rookie quarterbacks, like Derek Carr and Pat Mahomes, other guys that had that infrastructure kind of there to, like, help them grow, I didn't have that. And so, you know, obviously guys like you helped me. Because I remember getting in the huddle and I might have forgot, like, the last two words in the huddle call. And you're like, da-da-da. I'm like, all right, let's go. Ready, yeah. Break. You know what I mean? Like, I remember all that. So when I'm thinking of this roast, I'm like, how can I even joke he would? Like, this dude literally saved me in a lot of situations. But I still got some good stuff. But nonetheless – it definitely hurt the trajectory. And also, I had some injuries, too. I know you remember that. I hurt my knee, my second preseason game, tore my meniscus, got surgery, and I was back for the New England game in, like, 3 weeks. That's crazy. Like, you think about, like, tearing your meniscus, then you're playing in 3 more weeks. That's
in your
extreme.
First start of your
first
rookie
start ever
year
versus Tom
New
Brady. Yes. Yeah, like, at home, which was good. And we almost beat him. I mean, it was a close game.
We should have beat him.
We should have beat him.
I love Stevie Johnson to death.
Yes,
he made
bro.
So many great
plays,
catches. But
yeah.
He dropped the ball on
yep.
third down at the end of the game. That
yep.
ices the game.
Yep.
And yep. And once he dropped it, it gave them the opportunity
to get it back
to come back. They had a 4th-and-3 that they just barely converted on
yeah.
that game-winning drive.
Yeah.
And then
that was crazy.
And then – so I want to ask you what your favorite moment from your career in Buffalo was, just because there's a ton
yeah.
of people from Buffalo that will listen in.
Of course.
Let me say mine while you think of that one.
Okay.
Mine is the very following week. Mm-hmm. We come back and beat the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had made the playoffs. They did.
They
made the playoffs the previous year, so it's mm-hmm. game two of the season.
Yep.
They come into Buffalo. We should have beat New England,
yeah.
obvious playoff team,
right.
in the first game. We should have mm-hmm. beat them. Then the second week, we beat them at home
yeah.
and on a game-winning touchdown pass
yeah,
in the corner to Stevie, so he makes
yeah.
that one. And I tackled him in the end zone, and we just had so much
yeah.
fun
yeah.
throughout that win. But
yeah.
I remember
throwing that, and I remember, like, crying. I remember CJ came up to me, baby boy, get your – he's like, get your ass up, whatever.
Yeah.
And just excited. You know what I mean? We were both all – everybody was elated, man. That was my first victory. And actually, that was against Coach McDermott. So I feel like Coach McDermott remembered that, because when we played you guys when I was in Oakland, and I came back here, and I'll never forget this. I talked to you, of course. I think I caught up with Lee was with us. So who else did I talk to? A couple other guys, maybe Jeff.
Kyle Williams.
Yeah, Kyle, all those guys, right, that were my teammates when I was there in Buffalo. And then Coach McDermott came up to me, and he shook my hand and looked me in the eye. He said, hey, man, they're treating you all right here? And I was like, yeah, Coach, you know, it's pretty good. But at the time, I was still, like, anti. I was like, yeah, I'm glad to be out of there, like, whatever. Like, I've moved on, whatever. And to me, I guess once I stepped away from the overall view of how I thought Buffalo fans perceived me, which was not good. You know, I thought, like, they don't like me, they don't this, they don't that. And back then I was younger, so I cared a lot more about what people thought of me.
Right.
And we all go through that as young men, as young athletes. And so, you know, I didn't realize that Coach McDermott really was asking, like, hey, are you good? Like, is everything okay? You know, and I felt like he cared about me. You know what I'm saying? Even though he wasn't my coach, he was a new coach in Buffalo, he kind of saw what happened there and things like that. So he was the D.C., for Carolina that year. But I would say my favorite memory, man, all right, I would say when we beat the Jets, and you may not remember this like specifically, but the first time we played the Jets in New York, my rookie year, they trashed me. Like, we looked bad as an offense. I remember trying to make checks for all that zero looks and stuff that they
yes.
were giving us. And Nate, the week before, he's like, hey, well, look, if they bring down the safety, do this, send the line right or send them left or whatever. Keep a running back in for protection, all this kind of stuff. And so they would show the look and then, you know, get out of it. They would just play coverage, or they would play coverage and then bring zero.
And it didn't help that we were getting trashed up front during that game.
Yeah, Wilkerson
so
was
like,
getting crazy. Like,
so
it was tough. You know what I mean? Like, and then they had another DN.
Sheldon Richardson.
Sheldon was good, but they had another guy, 97, with really long arms. He was older.
Calvin Pace,
who was good. You know, he wasn't the best, but he was solid.
So they were dropping in coverage and only bringing 4, but they were getting home fast.
But then we were still blocking up 7, so then they're in coverage, nobody's open. You know what I mean? So
right.
I couldn't catch on to it. And I started seeing ghosts as a rookie, and what that means is you start seeing things that aren't there for our fans listening at home. And so then I got hurt a few weeks after that. So I remember Coach Hackett's dad, Paul Hackett came in, and I remember watching tape with him, who was an awesome dude, very patient in the film room. And I don't even know if you knew this, but I stayed back and watched tape with him for maybe like 5 or 6 days.
Yeah, I didn't know.
When I wasn't playing, yeah. And we might have played the Jets in 3 weeks ahead, and I knew I would be healthy enough to play the Jets by the time we got there. So we're just going over all the looks on their defense, like, all right, Rex is going to do this. This is what they do on third down. This is what they do on third and four. This is what they do on third and seven. And I got a chance to start that game. And if you remember, we beat the Jets. And I remember I made some checks to, like, Hogan on, like, just a simple out route. And I remember I checked it. I saw the look. They played man. They were low safety. So I was like, all right, zero's coming. Made the check. Hit Hogue for a first down. I was like, all right, let's go. You know what I mean?
Was that when we knocked them out of the playoffs?
Yeah, it was late in the season. Yes. They came here and played us. Yes. My rookie year.
So yeah. That after that game was one of the weirdest feelings I've ever had post-game in my entire life. Because Ryan Fitzpatrick, one of my greatest friends in the world, is a starting quarterback for them.
Yep.
And if they beat us, they go to the playoffs. Sure. If they lose, they're out.
Yep.
And I hated the Jets. I hated Rex before he came here. I love him as a person. Love him now. We still text.
Of course.
And I love playing for him. But, like, when you play against him, he's that big, bold personality. And you're like, oh, I hate this dude.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, trying to dissect the defense and all that, we're like, man, we hate these guys. Yep. We do not want them to go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But Fitz didn't play well at all.
Yeah.
And just how crushed he was after that game. But I was so happy because we knocked them out of the playoffs.
I know.
It was, like, one of the weirdest feelings for me. And our season was over regardless. But as a competitor, like, I don't care who's over there. I want to beat them. But I had that weirdest feeling. But that's a great story.
That's the first one that comes to mind. And it was more so like, you know, it really taught me resiliency, bro. Like, that's probably the biggest thing I learned here in Buffalo is, like, I now know I can go through anything. You know what I mean? And I remember getting booed in the preseason game. We were playing Tampa Bay and we weren't playing good. Couldn't get anything going on offense. My second year. And just remember putting all that pressure on myself. When, you know, that's part of the position. But, you know, looking back on it, I was telling someone yesterday, like, if I came to Buffalo now at 29 years old, if I came to the Bills and if I was still playing, all that kind of stuff, like, what I know now as a man, I would be able to handle all of that way more than I was able to or than I did when I was, like, 22, 23. You know what I mean?
No doubt.
And that's part of growing and it's part of just life and growth. But, you know, back then, bro, I was just a wreck. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have that confidence that I had when I was at Florida State. Although I still could play. You know what I mean? It just wasn't consistent. My mind wasn't there. And especially once a few things happened to me, obviously getting benched. I'm sure we'll get to all this stuff, but I don't want to overhaul on the pod. But
no, you're fine.
Yeah.
Dude.
And when we play Houston, my second year, what year was that for you? Like seven?
I know
you six.
Six or seven.
Six,
I think.
So OG by that time, and we're playing Houston. We were beating Houston. If you remember, yeah, we were beating them. You know, I think threw Sammy a touchdown, and obviously I had that pass. Not obviously, so I threw a pass to Freddie in the flat. The line slid left, so we left JJ free. Or maybe Chantrell. Somebody was supposed to cut JJ to get his hands down, right? And I catch it. Same thing we worked in practice. I catch it. Threw it to the flat to Fred, not thinking JJ. I'm thinking his hands are down. So I'm like, all right, got a free pass on the throw. And it would have been a first down. Play super soft on Fred. And so JJ, being JJ, jumps up, tips the ball in the air to himself, catches it, and takes it back to the house. And so I saw that clip on Instagram maybe a month ago. And, of course, the only reason I saw it because so many people started like, oh, EJ, infamous EJ, and da-da-da, good old EJ, whatever, right? And so I was like, what is this? And I looked at it. And so the whole time – I guess previous to seeing that video, I thought that I just couldn't catch JJ, right? I was like, yo, like, he's the fastest dude. He's this big dude. Like, I couldn't catch him. Sure enough, like, I think it was Kareem Jackson or somebody, like, blocked me. So that, like, it actually made me feel better. Play sucked, but I was like, all right, I would have caught him if somebody hadn't blocked me, but whatever. So I just remember when that happened, bro. I remember my confidence went from here, like, literally through this, like, down here, you know?
It's the loudest I've ever heard a stadium
bro,
in my life.
What?
When he returned that touchdown and they played turn down for Watt,
yes,
it was the loudest I've ever heard a stadium to this day still.
Dog, honestly, I never in a moment of playing football, I had never felt so defeated in that moment. And that's just me speaking honestly on our pod. And I had never felt so defeated. I remember putting my head down, which is something that I've always been taught to never do in anything, like school, football, life, whatever. I did that. And so we end up losing that game and we're 2-2 at the time. But the magnitude on me personally, I remember sitting in my locker. You may not remember this, E, but I remember sitting in my locker with my head down because I felt like I let the guys down, truthfully. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it was more – it wasn't just about me. I felt like I let the Bills fans down. I let the city down. I let you guys down, the leaders of our team down. And, you know, because our defense was playing decently well, like Fitz – again, against Fitzpatrick.
Right.
Fitz actually had a good game that game, too. He was throwing some deep bombs and Nuke and all those kind of guys. But DeAndre Hopkins for our fans at home. But – I just remember being really sad, bro, honestly. And the next day, they called me into a meeting. I think I went to go watch the tape with Nick, with Coach Hackett. We're processing it, cool, whatever, moving forward to next week. And then Doug calls me into his office, and he's like, hey, you know, sit down, whatever. He's like, well, look, man. And we had Kyle Orton at the time. So he's like, I want you to take a step back. I want you to learn. You never had a chance to learn from Kevin Cobb the year before because Kevin got hurt and ended up being on IR. So we're going to have Kyle be the starter. I want you to learn from him. You know, this isn't an indictment on you. You know, we still love you. We still this. We still that. And so I was like, I just remember being obviously, like, heartbroken.
Right.
Got to the car, called my agent, called my dad, crying, all this kind of stuff, sad, whatever. Just more embarrassed, I guess. Embarrassed, you know? Because this is, like, really the first true adversity I had faced in sports. Like, sports, you know, for you, too, it always came easy to us. You know what I mean? Like, we were just gifted. We were blessed with talent and favor also. People liked us, and they gave us opportunities. And so when that opportunity was taken from me, I learned that, like, okay, that loss of confidence – or that show of loss of confidence to my team was more important than actually throwing that interception. You know what I mean? So that's that's something I learned. You know what I mean? Like, no matter how bad things are, if you're the leader, and I was the assumed leader because I was a quarterback, right? No, whether I was a first, second year, it didn't matter. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. You ran
still
the huddle.
The leader,
for
exactly.
Sure.
And so that was the biggest learning lesson of my sports career at that point. You know what I mean? Like, you can never, never look defeated, especially to your men that are looking at you for leadership, all right? And so that was, you know, that was another memory, obviously not a fond memory, but, you know, definitely part of my life and things that I've learned. And obviously I ended up never getting my full starting job back after that because Marone left and he went to Jacksonville. Then Rex came in and he brought in his own guys. I felt like they pretty much were trying to get me out of Buffalo anyways. They brought in Ty and they brought in
Matt Castle.
And I still played well in the preseason, so I guess that kind of –
You played really
played
well.
Played really well, yeah, and it kind of afforded me a roster spot at least. And I remember G-Ro coming to me before the first game, and I'm getting dressed, and he's like, hey, you're going to be inactive. I was like, what's that mean? I didn't even know what inactive meant.
Right.
And so he was like, well, it means you put your sweatsuit on, you come out and watch the game. And so I'm laughing about it now, but in the moments, bro, that's why I say, like, there are so many series of events that were, like, just hurt. You know what I'm saying? Just hurt my confidence. And so – yeah, bro, it's just, you know, but it's all a learning experience. And I know that I went through these things. There's more that I could talk about. I went through all these things to share with either my son one day or with my daughter if she plays sports or with a kid somewhere. And that's why I'm excited to do what I'm doing now with the ACC Network.
Right.
I try to pour that into the kids in college just so they can have an understanding of, like, hey, man, it's not always going to be super sweet. You might go in the first round. You might go in the second round and all that. You want to make good money, all that kind of stuff. But still, just be prepared for – you know, the learning lessons, because they're going to come.
Yeah, and man, I really appreciate your vulnerability right there.
Yeah, just being
honestly,
real. Honestly, yeah.
I had one of those moments my second year. I was coming off a broken leg. We were playing against the Jets, and I was playing guard at the time. I'm a way better center than I am guard.
Sure.
I'm playing guard at the time. I'm literally hobbling around the field. The Bills trainers could not figure out why. I couldn't even bend into my ankle. So as an offensive lineman, you have to play on your whole foot or else you're just so weak. Couldn't bend into my ankle. And it was the third quarter, and I'm hobbling around out there, and they took me out and put Urbick in, and Urbick did really well.
Right.
And so they came up to me that week, and they said, hey, we're going to rotate you this week with you and Urbick. You're going to go every few series. Actually, we had a bye, and then we're going to do that. And I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go down to Dr. Anderson, the number one foot and ankle guy in the country.
Yeah.
I'm going to see what's up with my ankle, and if it's bad, I'm just going to get surgery right now because –
because I'm with the truth.
If you're already benching me right now and I'm out there not playing as good as I can because I'm hurting so bad, I'm just going to get it over with.
Yeah.
And I'll just get surgery now so that because we had a new staff in 2010.
Right,
said, I'll show you this spring the type of player I am and I'll get my job back.
Yep.
So I go down there. I had terrible bone spurs that came from my broken leg healing up to where I couldn't bend into it, but it was pinching in the front. So Dr. Anderson was like, hey, I can make it feel good for the rest of the season, so I'm going to give you a cortisone shot, but you have to get surgery at the end of the season, and you're going to hate me for it because you're going to feel really good, and you're going to say, why don't you just give me another shot?
Why do I have to go
through an ankle surgery? Yeah. But you have to. So I got the injection. They started me the following week. But then whenever you have a moment like that and everything's going good, well, and then you have a moment like that, well, then you play with your hair on fire.
Okay, of course.
So then I'm like, I have to play good. And I played well the rest of the year.
Yep.
And I remember getting ankle surgery after the season. Like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done. I am like, I can run around. I can do anything. I can, and I have to get an ankle surgery. Yeah. This stinks.
Bro, isn't it crazy how we – You think back of how we like pushed our bodies to the limit, though. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Now that we're retired, like I saw how you lost weight. You know, you chiseled up, you know, more. You don't look like a lineman. You really never looked like a lineman to me, anyways. I used to always say, bro, you could play tight end or something, bro. Like,
but dude, I got some pictures on my phone right now that I can show you. Man, I was fat.
But well, you weren't fat, bro. That's the thing. You really weren't fat though, because considering there were like some real fat linemen that we had and played against, but. Nonetheless, I think back to, like, and I said this earlier, like, I tore my meniscus the second preseason game, and I was playing 3 weeks later, bro. Like, that's not normal. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And whether we got shots or whether we took, you know, some medicine or whatever, you know, now that I'm retired, I can't speak for you, E, but now that I'm retired and I watch football, I'm just like, bro, like, we literally will push our bodies to the maximum limit. You know what I mean? So
yep.
I think, you know, this is also to guys that are listening, like, man, take care of your bodies too. You know what I mean? That's one thing that that's actually partly why I retired. You know what I mean? I had tore my meniscus twice, and I was telling you this before we got on air for the pod. Tore my meniscus when I was you know, training, and then I signed with Kansas City. My knee still didn't feel great, and this might have been because it was the second time I had tore it, so I wasn't able to like bounce back, you know, health wise as fast. And so that was part of why I, you know, retired to take the job with the ACC Network, because I wasn't gonna try to be the backup for the Kansas City Chiefs, who had Pat Mahomes, the ex-MVP. Say Pat goes down, which he did. Pat got hurt in the season. I think he missed 3 games, so Matt Moore came in and played.
Yeah.
And Matt played well. But, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm already not 100% healthy right now, so maybe I should, like, listen to my body. And I have a great opportunity with ESPN, great company, great, you know, new network, like, you know, and the ACC Network. So that's really why I transitioned and moved on. And it's just obviously funny that they end up winning the Super Bowl ring. But it's funny. So when I retired in June, because I had to retire to get out of that contract to take the ESPN job, Coach Reed called me back in August, and Chad Henne had broken his ankle in the preseason. So Coach Reed called me. I'm literally getting prepared to go to my grandma's 80th surprise birthday party in Virginia, right? And this might be like the last week of the preseason for the league. And he's like, hey, you know, have you been working out? And I had. At that time, I still was working out. I was throwing the ball like twice a week just to do it. Not necessarily to get back in the league, but just because I love throwing football.
Yeah, that's what you always
done. It's just what I always done. And so I was still doing that, staying in my routine. And I was like, well, yeah, I have. And he was like, well, look, Chad went down last night. You know, we want you back. Your money will be guaranteed. Come on back. So I literally had the opportunity to go back into the NFL, and I told my agent, I was like, well, look, I want X amount of dollars as, you know, comparable to what other backups were getting
right
in the NFL. And I had no leverage because I didn't play the season before. Gruden had cut me in September, and I guess, you know, whatever. So I had no leverage. And so they ended up saying, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And then they signed Matt Moore the next day. But nonetheless, I wasn't 100% sold to go play anyway, just because I had already enjoyed the new job that I have now, and my knee still didn't feel great. And now it feels good. I really feel like I could probably play now if I wanted to, but I'm kind of like, I'm a year out of it, 2 years out of it now. I haven't played in a game since August of 2018, so I'm good. You know what I mean? I got it out of my system. I'm extremely blessed, fortunate, and I have some other things going on off the field that are exciting too. So
yeah, in that – attitude of gratitude, as Rob Vaca said on the podcast before, that attitude of gratitude is what it's all about. It's like, yes, do you miss playing ball? Yes, that's fine. That was a great time of your life. Do you wish you came in a better situation? And we could have gone down a rabbit hole of talking about guys that come into the league in a great situation and the guys that don't, especially from the quarterback position, but really all positions. I could talk about, you know, the Bills drafted me at 28. Mm-hmm. The Patriots call my agent, and they were so mad that they didn't give him a heads up because the Patriots had traded back twice.
To get you.
Well, they traded back because they weren't going to take me whenever they were picking initially. Right. They traded back twice, and then the Bills end up taking me right before. I'd never taken an official visit up here. I wasn't one of their visitors up here. You know, there was just a lot of reasons why. They had just picked up a center in free agency.
Right.
well, if I go to New England, which I am so blessed to play my career in Buffalo, the people we met up here, me and my wife, how close we got up here, sure. Everything I went through up here made me into the man I am now, and I'm so incredibly grateful. We're yep. back here in Buffalo. They're yep. doing the roast of Eric Wood tonight.
Yes, sir.
I'm getting paid to
Big
get
time.
Made fun of.
You know, yeah, it's awesome.
I've been hanging out with my buddies my whole life getting made fun
right,
of
right.
and
now
making fun
paid.
Of them, and now I get paid to do it. That's a pretty cool gig.
Right.
But I might be a Hall of Famer, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if I'm a first-round yep. offensive lineman to yep. a team that wins six Super Bowls or five Super Bowls when I'm in the NFL and I'm a first-round lineman, I probably make the Pro Bowl every year mm-hmm. because of being a first-rounder. Yep. No matter how you play,
yeah.
if you're a first-round offensive
they'll
lineman
put you up there.
And
yeah.
you, I'll be in the Pro Bowl every yep. year, I mean, I could potentially be a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
You know, so you
would be like Jeff Saturday, who played with Peyton and all those. You know what I'm saying?
For
like
sure.
You'd be like one of those guys, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's just – it's crazy how careers work out.
Yeah.
But so you go to Oakland, you go to Kansas City, and now you're in this broadcast world, you're in
yeah.
this sports media world. What was the hardest part about transitioning into sports media as a former athlete?
Yeah, I would say – and let me just so the fans know. So I left Buffalo as a – my fourth year, played out my rookie contract. They didn't take my fifth-year option, which I kind of understood. And I knew the Bills' relationship I had wasn't great, and then the last game I played in wasn't great either versus the Jets. They gave me a chance to play, and I didn't play well. My confidence just wasn't there, to be honest. And I had, you know, little to no confidence in myself, right? And so left there, signed with Oakland Raiders, Coach Jack Del Rio, Coach Todd Downing, who was my coach in Buffalo. They brought me in. Backed up Derek Carr for a year. It was excellent. It was a lot of fun being in California. The weather was good. The Raiders fans were amazing. Raider Nation is a real thing. They're awesome. And then John Gruden gets the head coaching job. I signed with the Raiders again in March. So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to be the backup for my sixth season. And, you know, I felt like Gruden was trying to give Connor Cook the job. You know, Connor was younger than me. I guess he might have liked Connor coming out maybe. And then, you know, I wasn't perfect in the spring either, you know, so I remember him and Coach Ole, you know, not to say they didn't like me, but I felt like they were kind of giving Connor the leg up. You know, he was younger and probably cost less, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go through the preseason. I get the fourth preseason game, play excellent. We play Seattle on the road. I think I threw like three touchdowns. I was like 24 of 27 or 28. I always play well in the preseason just to show like, hey, I can make this damn team, excuse me. And so you probably cut that one out, but I played well and got cut, and then I was on the street. So I went back to L.A. I just bought a home there. So I'm working out, training, and then my business manager, Humble Lukanga, or excuse me, Lukanga, he was like, hey, man, I want you to take a meeting with United Talent Agency. And I was like, what's United Talent Agency? And he's like, oh, they do TV. They help guys get into broadcasting. I was like, all right, cool, because I got my degree in communications at Florida State, so that's mm-hmm. what I wanted to do anyways. But not then. I was like, I'm still young. I'm 28. I can still keep playing football. You know, it's my sixth year. And so I take the meeting, met with a guy named JB, a guy named Ryan, awesome dudes. They're agents for UTA. And so I end up not signing with them, but, you know, I tell them, like, yeah, I'm interested in getting into this. And so they're like, hey, the ACC Network is launching. We think you'd be a good fit for them. You played at Florida State. You know, we see the marriage, whatever. And so I ended up doing an audition, did another audition, ended up getting that job a few months later. But subsequently, I had signed with Kansas City before I got the job from ESPN. So I'm thinking I'm going to keep playing football. I end up retiring. Then I take the ACC Network job. So to get to what you asked, E, the biggest – or I guess the toughest transition was just, like, coming from an NFL mindset quarterback to, like, okay, now this is college. You know what I mean? And I'm sure you can mm-hmm. say the same thing. You know, watching the games at the college level compared to watching film when you were in the NFL, it's like, okay, this is – it was kind of like pulling hair out a little bit.
It's just like when you go from high school to college, it's tough to watch the high school game.
Yeah, it's like –
go to NFL looking back on college.
It's like,
not that everybody stinks, but
sure,
you're
sure,
like,
but
man.
There's a good amount of teams. And not to say they stink, they just don't know what they don't know. They're young, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm sure people could say the same about me when I was in college, the same about you when you were in college. I mean, we just didn't know what we didn't know. The things that you learn and – the expertise that you get once you get into the NFL is just completely different. That's why we're in, you know, professional ranks. And so that was probably the toughest thing, was like kind of holding back my tongue and not getting on air and talking badly about a kid, because that's not what my job is. You know what I mean? My job is to analyze, you know, say, hey, that throw, although it may have been a terrible decision, say that in a way that is like edifying to still that kid and his parents who are at home watching, so you're not embarrassing them. Because I've been that guy where I'm playing and there's a guy on TV that's, oh, EJ this and EJ like – you know,
well, that guy probably didn't play.
Never played.
You know what I mean?
Never
played. So he doesn't get it.
Exactly. You already know. I'm glad you said that. And so you know, that was probably the toughest transition. And then, of course, I still missed playing. You know, I was a month or two out from playing with the Chiefs and practicing. So, you know, I still kind of had that football swag in my mind. Like, I could be still doing this despite my knee or whatever. And so those were probably the – it was more mental than anything. Like, just kind of moving on and saying, hey, if you're going to make this decision, just go 100% with it. Don't just say one foot in, oh, maybe I'll go back and play. Like, nah. Like, if you made a commitment to ESPN – be honorable to your commitment. That's why I actually didn't go back and play with the Chiefs when they called me back, because I had already signed with ESPN, and I felt like they were giving me a real opportunity and something that I can do for a long time, not just for the next 3 or 4 years, whether it's football or something else. So I feel like, you know, hopefully my career at ESPN will continue to grow and just continue to grow.
Yeah, I remember texting you as soon as you took the job. I texted you immediately, yep. And I said, E, your second career is going to even be more impressive than your first career. Yeah. And I say impressive. First-round draft pick, winning NFL games, you know, the right situation.
Right.
Could, you know, who knows what would have happened to your NFL career. But you commanded NFL teams as a 23-year-old. Yep. Like, you were that dude in Buffalo.
Yeah.
As soon as you got there, I remember someone was like, is EJ going to be the franchise quarterback? Mm-hmm. I said, I have no idea. I can't predict the future, but he's got that it factor. He looks like a quarterback. He acts like a quarterback.
Appreciate it, bro.
Like a big-time quarterback. Yeah. And I see those dudes. I brought you the Kentucky Derby 1 year, and, like, you look like all the other big-time quarterbacks that are there, and you act like them. You conduct yourself that way. I said, dude, your second career is going to be more impressive than the first one.
You did.
You know, and I know that, and I knew that because of the way you prepared as a player.
Yeah.
You'll take that same approach. What – fill in the listeners, like, on a week-to-week basis throughout the season. So, you're doing – you're an analyst for ACC Network, so you got to cover all the teams. I'm probably prepping for two teams a week.
Yeah.
You're prepping for all of them. What's your routine look like preparing for a weekend of college football?
Well, first off, thank you, bro. Appreciate it. You've always spoke life into me, and I love you for that. Seriously, thank you.
No doubt.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm grinding on film. So I'm catching up on, say if there's a game Saturday, obviously I watch the games in the studio with the guys, but I go back, I start with, you know, usually we always watch a Clemson game first on Monday because they were the best team. So
right, and you got to cover them the most.
Yeah, exactly. So I know we're going to be talking Clemson. I know we're going to be talking Florida State because I'm a Florida State guy. I know we're going to be talking Miami because Miami, like certain blue bloods in the conference that we know we're going to talk about. So I watch those games on Monday. So at least – 3 games Monday. And when I say games, I'm watching offense and defense. So technically it's 6, right? Because you got offense, defense on both sides. So then another 3 on Tuesday. So I guess I have 18 games total of offense and defense watched by Wednesday. And then I'm calling Claire Atkins, our producer in studio, Wednesday afternoon. I'm telling her this is what I want to talk about for my manual to success. That's my segment on the show that I do. Which is usually about, you know, breaking down a quarterback, breaking down a receiver, breaking down a defense, breaking down, like, okay, these are the X's and O's as to why this team will have success versus whoever they're playing. And then Thursday, I'm kind of like, all right, cool. Is there anything I'm missing? Let me go back and just double check. Then Thursday night, I'm on a plane to Bristol. Well, I fly into Hartford and drive to Bristol. Friday morning, we have a meeting. And then Friday night, we're doing the show at, like, 7 or 6 to 8. And then Saturday – we're there from like 9:30 until like 12:30 at night. So we're there all day. So I know technically I only work 2 days out of the week, but I'm putting in a ton of work. Monday through Wednesday is the bulk of my work. And, you know, it's fun. I mean, I sit and watch, my, you know, it's my computer. I actually get it up on my TV and I watch tape like I was doing when I was a player. So I think that was actually kind of the saving grace for me just because I still felt like I was very in much the mode of preparing for a game.
Mm-hmm.
Just I don't have to go out and play. You know what I mean? I don't have that pressure of having to perform anymore.
Yeah, the first time I called a game, so my first year out of the league, I was doing spot duty for Fox and I called a couple pregame shows. I got to call one game that year. It was Thanksgiving weekend, of course. No one wants to call a game Thanksgiving weekend, so they bring in the spot duty guys. So I called a game, and after the game, my wife was like, how was it? And I said, honestly, before the game, I had to prepare. I got a little nervous. Mm-hmm. After the game, you get a real grade.
Yeah.
You know, you get feedback. Yep. You have real conversations about football with the coaches, the players. Mm-hmm. I said, I think I want to give this a shot.
Yeah.
Looking out into the future, EJ Manuel in the broadcast media world, What's a home run for you in 5 or 10 years from now?
So, honestly, bro, first off, you do a great job, too, because I watch all your games.
That.
You guys, the three of you guys do a really, really good job. It's you, Roddy, and Pac, right? Or no, Wes. You, Roddy, and Wes. Excuse
yep.
me. Wes is going to kill me for saying that.
For Pac.
Right, yeah. Like Pac obviously is not the guy that's
yeah. Mark Packer is yeah. Wes Durham's radio partner. Packer yeah. doesn't call games.
Exactly. But, and, thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, so it's a slip of the tongue.
Wes Durham, Roddy Jones, and Eric Wood. So we always watch your guys' games. You guys usually have like a noon or sometimes prime time game. You guys do a great job.
But, I appreciate that.
I would say in 5 to 10 years, man, you'd be surprised by this, but my goal is to be on Good Morning America.
I love it.
And it's not even football. Like, that's obviously the news. So I look at Michael Strahan, like, he to me is who I would like to be in 5 to 10 years, you know? A guy that transitioned from football. Obviously, he was a Hall of Famer. But, you know, at the end of the day, talent is talent. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So Strahan does a fantastic job on all the shows he does, but specifically Good Morning America, because my mom, you know, getting ready for school, my mom always had that on the TV. So I grew up watching that, you know. And so to see him transition from being a super athlete to now being a legit, you know, person in the news industry, I feel like I could do that. And so that's a home run for me. Obviously, of course, to continue to grow with ACC Network as it grows. So if they, whether they bring me to the big ESPN or if I stay with ACC Network, I'm fine. Like, I, you know, I'm excited about that.
Right.
Because ACC Network will continue to grow, so especially when the ACC is back really good in football and basketball. It'll help our jobs both. And
no doubt.
But that's my biggest goal right now, man, is to get on to the ABC market, the NBC market, the CBS market, and actually, like, do, like, real news. That's
right. And you're
do.
So smart and well-rounded. That'd be a natural fit for you,
thank
too,
you, bro,
because
yeah.
you're not necessarily pigeonholed into just football. Shoot,
right.
You get out of football, now you're talking.
Yeah.
Now you're talking baseball and basketball
yeah.
for
yep.
ACC Sirius.
Yep.
So
yeah. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
you're doing that as well, and I can't wait to see your transition. I love that you have a goal like
yeah.
that to put out there, because mm-hmm. what's the worst that happens when you shoot for the stars and say I want to be on Good Morning America,
yeah.
and you still
do something great, whether it's, you know, a CNN or some type of role that's close to that. Because I live in LA, as you know, and all the viewers, I live in Los Angeles, so that was part of the appeal to move there, because all that stuff is there. Now I know a lot of it's in New York City too, but, you know, like E and ABC, CBS, NBC, they all have a CNN, they all have an office there in LA. So, you know, hopefully, and my talent agent knows that too. So he's still kind of trying to put me in the right, you know, it's really about who you know and who knows you. You know what I mean?
Right.
As far as them giving you an opportunity. Now, it'll be up to me when that opportunity comes. I got to knock it out the park. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that for you, brother.
Thank you.
All right. So we get some recurring questions week to week. These are really fun to compare guys' answers. I mean, you can be as short or as long-winded on all these as you want to.
Yep.
If you didn't get into broadcasting post-football, what's something you would have liked to get into?
Real estate.
Real estate.
Yeah, love real estate. I'm that kid or that guy, kind of a nerd when it comes to, like, I love looking at homes. You know what I mean? I love looking at prices. I love seeing how the market changes, whether it goes up, whether it goes down. I love seeing how a $2 million house in Los Angeles is a $600,000 house in Louisville, Kentucky. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, what's the difference?
Maybe it's less,
like,
than that.
Might be less than that. Yeah,
depending,
I mean,
on the area and
the,
all that.
The house I bought my parents, bro, like, if I bought that house, I bought the house in Chesapeake, Virginia. For my parents in 2013, my mom had just recovered from cancer, and, you know, that was one of the, how I wanted to bless my family, right? It was a big, first big purchase I made. That same house in L.A., maybe 3.5. Just
right.
because L.A., you have that luxury tax of the real estate, the land, all that kind of stuff. So I would say real estate is probably what I would have got into had I not been in broadcaster.
That's great. What's your favorite book?
Favorite book, man, The Truth About Men. And I don't know if you even know about that, but it's Devon Franklin is who is Megan Good's husband, who's an actress. But Devon is a big time Hollywood producer, and he's also a pastor. And so the book is basically about talking about how men and what we go through, and really it's more of an explanation to women and men as to why we have the urges that we do. You know, whether it's, you know, sexually, whether it's, you know, as a husband, as a boyfriend, all these things. So it kind of just teaches you, like, how to date almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily telling you, like, do this, do that, but it's just kind of explaining to you why you might have these thoughts or these feelings. And I think it's also good for women to see too.
That's great. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah,
I have
good.
Not heard that. What role does your faith play in your life?
Man, everything, bro. My role is I feel like if I didn't have a faith-based background, like my parents taking my sister out of church or even having my own relationship with Christ, I feel like I wouldn't be where I am right now, for sure. You know, I always knew that God was orchestrating everything in my life from back to middle school and high school, just the success I had on the field. Because I had other friends that were really good at sports too, and I'm sure you could say the same. I had guys that were really good that might have got busted for weed, might have got busted for, you know, or might have had a baby or something like that. And it just kind of, you know, made them go right when I was able to stay on that road and keep going straight. And obviously having two great parents in my life. My parents have been married for 35 plus years. So having them and seeing that at home every day was huge for me. But I would say having faith is everything, bro. Like, because if I didn't have that, especially when I was playing in the NFL, there was times where I was like legit depressed, bro. Like for real, like not okay. And I wish, honestly, looking back on it, that's another thing. I wish I'd have shared that more with guys like yourself.
Right, because I would have loved to unpack that with you at the time.
Exactly. And I wish I'd have leaned on my friends more and not just looked at it as like, oh, we're just football team. You know, we're teammates and this and that. Like, it was more than that. You know what I mean? Right. I knew I had real guys that cared about me like you and Marquise and, you know, and Robert Woods and Freddie and CJ. You know what I mean? I wish I'd have told guys more. Yep. I used to talk to Marquise about it because we were kind of in the same boat. But, yeah, I mean, there was times where I was really, really low. And God is the only person that could get me out of that rut. And that's why I say it's literally like amazing grace that I'm still here now and also able to talk about it. You know what I mean? Like, I own everything that's happened to me. So, you know, considering I was a first-round pick, obviously didn't work out great here in Buffalo, and then my career ended after almost a sixth season. Now I'm doing ACC Network. I'm completely okay with that. You know what I mean? I'm still very proud of what I've done. I'm very proud of who I've become. I'm proud of the man that I was when I was still, you know, going through it. I still took the high road in a lot of situations when the media was bashing me and all those things. And that was because of my faith. You know what I mean? Because, like, I still hold myself to a higher standard. And, you know, yeah, it's rough right now, but I know there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know what I mean? That's kind of what faith gives me.
Yep. You mentioned your dad, and this is not one of the recurring questions. I just want to piggyback this, and I want to ask it. This is something that was hit my brain as soon as you said parents have been married for so long. You and your dad have always had a very special relationship. Yeah. You mentioned him earlier with his relationship to Bruce. Mm-hmm. Get Bruce to pour into you growing up. Yep. You know, special athlete. You and your dad have always had this great bond. What advice can you give to dads out there to – maintain a healthy relationship, like pushing your boy through sports, implementing a lifestyle of faith, which is, you know, which isn't fun for a young kid to do all the time, but then keep that relationship so strong that now you're 29 still, years old and you're still so tight.
Yeah. My dad did a great job, man, because I remember, you know, car rides home from AAU basketball practice and my dad like, man, you got to do this, you got to do that. I used to hate that. You know what I mean? I used to be like, man, I don't want to ride home with my dad. So I was like, can I ride home with mom? Whatever, just because he was on me, you know what I mean?
Right.
But it was still in like a – it was constructive criticism, you know what I mean? It was very like, I love you, so I'm going to tell you what you need to hear. You know what I'm saying? Not what you want to hear. And so I think it's a balance between that, obviously a balance between – really, what you know what it was? It's the example. You know what I'm saying? Like my dad would say something and he would do it. You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't be like, hey, I'm going to go cut the grass at 7 a.m. tomorrow, and he would tell me and my sister that – he'd be at up 6:45. You hear, you know, he's out there, you know, running the mower. And so, even though as a kid I didn't realize that was what example was, that's what my dad always did. So I think, you know, that's to my word to dads, you know, as far as pushing your son is, you know, push him because he needs the push. You know what I mean? I'm gonna push my kids the same way whenever I have them. I'm gonna push you. But at the same time, I'm still gonna let you know I love you. I'm still gonna let you know that you can do it. My dad always, he never let me say can't. You know what I'm saying? Like, the word can't or the whatever that is, pronoun, whatever it is, cannot, I can't, I could never say that. And so growing up in the house. And so all those little small things, you know, are really what helped me once I became a man and I was on my own. I wasn't in the house no more. You know, I kind of became the breadwinner of the family. And so I knew that my dad had raised me to be a man, you know. Now, obviously, there was things in my life that I had to go through myself to kind of learn, you know, more on my own. But, yeah, the biggest thing is be a man of your word. Your example is everything because your kids are watching. You know what I mean? My dad would wake up every morning at 4:30, go to work, no complaints. He might come home and, like, take a nap. And I'm like, Dad, wake up. Let's go hoop. Like, let's go hoop or let's go throw. And he would go do it. You know what I mean? I remember my dad will tell you a story whenever you see him next. I broke his pinky finger when I was, like, 13 from just throwing the ball out in the yard. And that's kind of when I was starting to get strong. My arm was getting strong, so I was humming it. But he always tells that story. I think that might have been the last time we played catch. But, yeah, bro, like, that was everything for me because I knew – I knew that it was okay to tell another man that I loved him because my dad told me that he loved me.
That's
you know what
great.
I'm saying? So I didn't have that shell-shocked, you know, I could express love to another man because my dad said it to me. So all those things in combination, you know, just tell your kids you love them, especially with Kobe and what happened, that tragedy. You know what I mean? Not to take it way left, but, like, what I saw from Kobe once he retired was him being a father. You know what I'm saying? Like the way that he was with his daughter Gigi, rest in peace. But just that example to me was like, man, you know what I mean? Like I want to have kids one day where I can like take them to games and show them the nuances. Not even about sports, but just let them know that you love them. You know what I mean? Hug them up and just kiss them. And I don't know. I'm sure you could say the same because you're a father. You know what I mean?
Sure. So and when I mean when that happened, and you know, at first I heard some people say like, you know, it's a shame we're not talking about more about the other families. Right. And I said, yeah, that's the way it is with celebrities. They're going to be in the spotlight more. And I was a Kobe Bryant fan. Same. I loved Kobe Bryant quotes. You know, I looked to him. He actually had a couple impactful things on my career. One, I read an article about what he was doing with bone broth. Mm-hmm. And I actually – they still have bone broth in the Bills facility that they make
from you.
For all the collagen.
Wow.
From me. But that's from Kobe Bryant.
That's awesome.
And they still have that in their facility. Kobe Bryant went to Germany to get stem cell treatment in his Achilles. When I heard about that, I got in my knee, and when I got in my knee, it wiped out so I did ACL, PCL, lateral meniscus in Dallas in 2011. I battled that for 5 years pretty much.
Wow.
At least four.
Yeah.
And where, like, literally every night, ice, compression, and that. Mm-hmm. I got that German stem cell.
Wiped all of it out.
Done. Wow. It doesn't even affect me anymore. Wow. That was Kobe Bryant. Yep. So little things like that, I started putting it together. But when I do speaking engagements now, I do this big deal about him changing his number after the scandal and about, you know, that was in 2003. Well, he passed in 2020. Mm-hmm. And 17 years later, no one's talking about that scandal.
Right.
Everyone's talking about how he is as a leader, as a dad, a teammate. It's never too late to change the narrative on your life, which he did at age – in his late 20s, early 30s, whenever it was when he changed his number. Like, it's never too late for you to change your legacy, and I tie it back in with that.
Yeah, that's great.
What's your favorite restaurant? And then we got, for the Buffalo audience, I need to know your top wing spot here.
Top wing spot is – all right, it's two, okay? So the first one is Bada Bing. I lived on Pearl Street when I was playing here. I know that's going to sound crazy, but I love Bada Bing. I actually went last night when I got in.
I was going to say, we're going to hit that tonight after the roast because my favorite late night food is Bada Bing stuffed pepper pizza.
Dog,
it's the
so
best
good.
Ever.
So good. I didn't get the pizza last night. I think I got like a chicken sandwich and like some spinach. I just try and be a little healthier. But
tonight we're going off the rails.
We're going in, right, exactly. Yeah. But Bada Bing's wings are good. Anchor Bar's wings are good.
You're going to lose all credibility with that one.
It's
all right.
It's okay. But that was one of the first places I was taken when I got here.
Yeah.
And then Duff's was really good to me, too. Duff's had good wings. But to me, you know what? I'm not from Buffalo, so nobody, you know, indict me for this. But I thought all the wings were good. There's no bad wings. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right. Compared to Louisville, Kentucky,
there's
50 wing places in Buffalo that are better than any wings that I had in Cincinnati. Now, Wild Mike's as a kid, Wild Mike's got some pretty special wings. I don't want to offend any of my Cincinnati guys.
Right.
But, like, there's tons of places better than that up here.
So, you know, to me, you can't go wrong. Either way, if you just look up some wing spots in Buffalo, you're going to find some good wings.
And then what's your favorite restaurant, like, on a day-to-day basis or, like, anywhere?
Yeah, there's a restaurant in Beverly Hills, not to sound all bougie or whatever, but it's called Honor Bar. They have, to me, the best chicken sandwich in America. And that's high praise because there's a lot of good chicken sandwich spots, obviously one being Chick-fil-A. But then, you know, then, like, seriously.
Like fried chicken or grilled
fried
chicken?
Fried chicken. Bro, so good. When you come to L.A., we're going to go. It's
done.
Delicious. It's off of Beverly Road or Beverly Drive, and it's like a small little bar. And then they got Beverly Hills Kitchen or something like that next door, which is like the regular restaurant, but like the bar's on the other side, and you can't get the chicken sandwich on the other side.
Gotcha.
You have to be in the bar. So,
well, we'll definitely go to the Honor Bar. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What was your first car?
First car, a 1991 maroon Toyota Camry with no transmission. We had to get a transmission from a salvage yard from like a Nissan Maxima or something like that. And then my neighbor who lived two houses over when I was in high school, Mr. Dave, I think. Yeah, Mr. Dave was able to put it in the car. Like, he was like an engineer. He wasn't even like a mechanic, bro. Like, he just he figured out. He was just a really smart dude. So, yeah, that was my first car, a 91 Toyota Camry.
Man, you got me beat only based upon age because I had a 91 Honda Accord. But
big time, big time.
But you
wait, Accords never got old, though. That's the thing. Like, Accords.
Oh, this sucker was old.
But I'm saying Accords could run forever, though.
Yes. Yeah. So, same
Cameras
with the Camry.
Yeah. Wait. Just funny story on that. I know we probably try to wrap up. But, like,
no, you're good.
So I remember when I got that car, it was from a family friend. They literally gave it to us because they were moving to California. And so, you know, it sat in front of my house for maybe 8 months before, you know, we had enough money to get the actual car or get the actual transmission. And so I would sit out there, bro. You can ask my parents. I would go out there and watch it every weekend. I couldn't drive it anyway. I could actually go in reverse, which is weird. I couldn't drive forward. And so I had speakers in there. I had an 8-disc CD player in there. I had, a new radio. Bro, I took great care of that car, seriously. And I couldn't drive it anywhere. So I bought some hubcaps from Kmart, put some hubcaps on the wheels.
That's
so
hilarious.
Yeah, bro.
I will never get on you about as many cars as you bought when you're in Buffalo because you appreciate it so much. Because and honestly, I'm kind of the same way. Yeah. Like, I really appreciate my cars, my truck that I got now.
What you driving? You got a Raptor now? What you driving now?
I have a Roush F-150. Nice. The racing company.
Yeah, yes,
and then
before you had a black F-150 though when you were playing here, right?
Yeah, and I had a Tahoe before that.
Right.
But I was going to get the supercharged Range Rover with the long wheelbase.
Yes, sir.
That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And so I was finally going to treat myself, and it was right when my career ended.
Yeah.
And a lot of people buy new cars right when their career ends, right?
Yeah.
And so it was right when my career ended. So I went and test drove it, and I let Leslie drive it on the way back from the test drive. And she was like, "No, I really want this." Well, she had just got a car.
She wanted it.
Just got a car like a year and a half earlier. But that the 3-row SUV, the Mercedes one, is
kids.
So tight.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like playing Tetris. Like, okay, well, I drove to church, but then Leslie's going to drop me off somewhere else. I have to get a workout in. So then we got to move the car seats just so I can drive.
Right.
Like,
to push it back.
All right. So she got
the
Range Rover.
Good.
So I still get to drive, and we got it.
Yeah, it worked
But that
out.
Was supposed to be mine, and I was going to wrap it in matte gray.
Ooh.
Of course, she doesn't want to do that, we got the white
one.
What
color is it? Is it just
white?
Okay, nice.
White with the black package on it.
Nice.
And we got it.
Yep.
And what was your first job?
First job was refereeing Little League football games when I was in high school. Yeah, so on Saturday mornings, I obviously would play Friday night, and then Saturday mornings we would referee – me and, like, another kid, you know what I'm saying? Like, out there refereeing, like, little flag football games. Kids were, like, 7 to 9 years old. So that was my first job.
Yeah, and that's
awesome. And then I would get, $50, $50 cash after the game, which was a big deal. Yeah, exactly.
Legit.
Like,
but
all right, gas money for the weekend.
And your dad, you mentioned your dad. Your dad had you working. You're the number two quarterback in the country
in high school. Yep.
And you're refereeing games the morning after your high school game. So much respect for that.
Appreciate it.
What's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie? Woo, dog. I'm a movie buff. And you know what?
I know it.
All love to Buffalo. But, like, when I moved here, it wasn't a lot to do when we had free time. So I would go to the movie theater all the time. I noticed they have an AMC downtown, which is awesome. I wish that was here when I was playing. But my favorite movie of all time is probably – Shawshank Redemption. I got to go
with
that.
That's a great one.
Yeah, I got to go with that. That probably to me is – if there's a movie – and I say this because if it's on TV, I'm watching it. You know what I'm saying? So Shawshank Redemption, you could throw in Remember the Titans. You could throw in John Q. You could throw in what's the one when he plays the cop, when Denzel played the cop?
Man on Fire?
Nah, not Man on Fire. That one's good too. Training Day. Training Day. Excellent. So I have, like, favorite actors, of course. Morgan Freeman, Denzel, Will Smith, Russell Crowe, so Gladiator. So I got a bunch of favorites.
That's cool.
Yeah.
EJ, I can't thank you enough for your time.
Yes, sir.
Again, I can't thank you enough for coming all the way across the country for me
for this
roast here tonight. It'd be a ton of fun. Hopefully no one ever sees any videos from this because it's supposed to be off limits.
No,
so hopefully no one ever sees it. But, man, I can't thank you enough. I wish you the best in this career that we're both both partaking on with ACC Network.
Of course. Well, look, E, first off, bro, you were the first person from the Bills that texted me this. And I was trying to think of things that I could crack on you about at the roast.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, I thought about it. I was like, yo, you were literally the first, not even, I think Marone and Doug Wheeler, they talked to me on the phone, but you were the first person, a part of the Bills organization, to reach out to me once I got drafted, bro. So I love you, man, seriously. You've always spoken life into me. I'm so excited that fans get a chance to hear your side of life on this podcast. Even how you were as a husband to your wife, and then once you had your daughter. Seriously, man, class act, one of the best people, not just best athletes, but for you to be my center when I was a young guy, I'm so thankful. Cause I felt like, you had my back. Even when I got benched, you still showed me love. You still talk to me.
Always,
like,
bro.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like, you never changed, bro. So, continue to do what you're doing, pouring into people's lives. You're a faith-based guy. I love you, man. So thank you for having me on your pod. Anything you need from me, I got you.
Love you, brother. Appreciate
you too,
it.
Bro. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.